So, do we have any additions?
I just need a signature on the spray permit for...
Knotweed. I signed it last time and got in trouble.
Why?
Got an official warning lodged in Montpelier against
me. Oh, that's right. Signature date.
I do like I do at work. Brian Wheeler.
Need a good pen?
I'll give you mine.
Gets here. Town equipment decision.
So, Mike Pritchard had me look into rules for buying equipment. And state statute says that the select board can borrow money for no more than 5 years for road equipment without voter approval. I also found that there's a Vermont Municipal Equipment Loan Fund where you can borrow, I think the maximum is $120,000, or no more than 75% of the purchase price of the equipment. And it's a 2% rate. And that, so if we could do like $120,000 through that loan, then we would pull the rest out of our CD. And I thought that that would need voter approval, but I checked with Vermont League of Cities and Towns, and they said that as long as it was a reserve fund, set up as a reserve fund specifically for equipment, we would not need voter approval to take it out for equipment. And I asked Wanda, and she said it was set up that way. So we shouldn't need any informational meetings. We shouldn't need any vote. We should just be able to get the process started.
Neither of votes to deal with the cutting up of the truck in order to qualify for that state money.
John said he looked, he asked, is it Lyle Gaffney?
Dan, yeah.
And he said that that was not a town truck, it was a school bus. So John's going to have Marla look into it because he thinks that there is still a program, but...
There is.
We need to find out what it is and how it works.
I have
because
some documents.
You,
go ahead.
You may need to do that process before we start any of the other stuff. I don't know.
According to information sent to me from international dealer Randy Clark Jr., he had sent me some copies of state documents that refer to the fact that if you apply for a certain loan or assistance under a particular program, that cutting the hole in the block and cutting the frame in half is a requirement, and you either get $30,000, $35,000, or some percentage of purchase price, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen that way. I haven't had a chance to follow up on it completely yet, but that's aside from these things that she's looked up. I just was trying to follow up on that. I never heard of such a thing until John mentioned it in the other meeting, so I wanted to try and begin the process of finding out what I can about it.
It'd be nice if someone could provide us like some paperwork, some documentation that shows us this, because so far it seems like it's a lot of word of mouth, like it happens, but we need like a little more.
You're thinking that's the type of loan, if you borrow a certain amount of money from somebody, that we have to do that from a different program?
Correct.
So what with this program she talked about in the beginning?
Not.
We don't have to do that.
Doesn't have anything to do with that that I know of. All I was trying to follow up on was John mentioning that, you know, we cut it up and make it unusable, and that's an automatic qualification for taking an old truck off the road or something. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. What I have is just a page or two that Randy had sent me that deals specifically with that program, mm-hmm. in that if you do this, you can qualify for this, but it's not a part of anything that she found. I wasn't looking for the voting thing. I was looking for an understanding of why the hell someone tells you you have to
right.
do that. But that was somewhat of a justification.
I would just like to know, honestly, if we could just sell the truck as is. Is what I'd like to know.
You can.
You can.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to know. Just if we can sell it as is. Put a bid sheet out there as is and go with that route. You know, it's a bid proposal or something. I don't know.
Now, do you think in its current condition it would be worth more than $30,000 or $35,000?
No.
Well, no, because you're gonna dump a motor into that thing. You're looking quite a bit of money there. You know, I ain't saying somebody in the backyard might have a motor for it. That's why you should put it out to bid, and it's gonna be worth more to one guy than it is the next, maybe.
You know, there's still, if we don't go the route of cutting something up, and any of the other purchase options, for instance, let a dealer take the truck, get a remand ISM Cummins engine for less money than we can, stick that in it, and they've got a working town truck type of thing as a spare for somebody or anybody else. I honestly don't know, as the whole sort of process popped up pretty quick.
So no, depending on what we decided to buy, nobody would take it for a trade? Whether we got $15,000 for it or...
I didn't say that. Randy wanted to look into, from a dealer standpoint, what it would cost them to get an engine to put into the truck to sell it as a good use spare or this, that, or the other thing. I have no idea. I'm assuming that whatever conversations John have had have been with Charlie Boyce or Lancaster or somebody that sells the Western Star Freightliner line. But like I say, as of this point, I haven't heard back from International yet. I was trying to find out. I wanted to see what some other towns had purchased recently, because I know that St. Johnsbury's running around with International tandems, and a couple others have been purchased through Clark's. And the other part I was trying to figure out is John said something about torque and horsepower specifications that was limiting the manual transmission application. So that was another part of the discussion.
Good luck with Adam.
I hadn't completed any of it.
Thank you.
Morning.
Morning. How are you?
Good.
So I guess next we need some numbers.
I did all the research for the town of Newark. I go with the town of Newark. But we can deal with this after we get done with moving.
Okay.
Want me to dive in?
Sure.
All right.
Can I please have the correct spelling of your last name?
Yep.
I keep butchering it.
No worries. It's right, like just like this. B-E-R-R-O-N.
Oh, I had Pearl. P-E-R-L-E. I'm sorry.
Nope, no worries.
Worse than I thought. Karen. Okay.
Okay. So I'll go through paperwork real quick. Aaron, you may have some of this already.
I have a whole stack, but I don't really have much to fill out because, like, the certification of compliance. Our roads are currently not up to standard, but we're working on that. So can we still?
Yeah. So you're just certifying that you're following your codes and standards. That doesn't mean that you're in compliance all the time. You know, it's as things get damaged that you are still following what you adopted in 2019. So. And that paper is more for grants and stuff. That's one of the papers that gets you the better grant match.
All your signatures on that one.
So Aaron, I'll show you some of these, and if you have it, I'll just put in a pile.
The letter that came in that email just kind of has all the information about the stuff that we're in the email.
Okay.
I just have all the attachments.
And then this would just be the other letter that's for the Class 2 painting, which I don't know that you don't have any paved Class 2 roads.
So
normally you just say if you're doing any paving in those Class 2, you'd let them know so they'd paint it. They'd wait to paint it. Mm-hmm. So right now, probably it's not worth painting. Just blower side. No, the upper side, it turns to dirt on top of the hill anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. So it may be worth just shooting an email to that email address right there and just say, you know, due to storm and ongoing work, you know, or don't worry about hitting us this year, and maybe they'll put you on early on the list next year or something when you guys get that road prepared. And then the other one, just the code and standard, which I think you just did that. Right. Did you need that date? 7/18/19 would be the date that you put in this spot right here.
I gave it to them.
All right.
Check the box in there. Do not.
So I have to fix that. Okay.
Yeah, so it's 7/18/19 that's the day you adopted the codes and standards. And then the contact sheet, you have that. Plan. I can fill this out. Like, if you have a spare copy of your budget and it was approved, I can bring this back and I'll fill it all out and then I'll send it off back to you for signature. And I can also go through it after I'm done talking. If you guys don't mind me sitting here, I can go through that while you talk, and then I can hand it back to you. So let's do that. Are you going to do any road posting? Y'all gonna do any?
No. Not unless needed. We usually don't post our roads.
A lot of towns don't, just because it's, you know, they know who's logging and they know, and they've already had conversations with them up at this point. So. But yeah. So this is just the paperwork for that. The letter that goes on file with the town, and then two notices posted in a public place within town if you do go to post.
Okay.
And Aaron, you do have these in your email if you get to that point.
They're also in the orange book, aren't they?
So not the reference to these are, but these would be the signed ones. Joe Flynn, the Secretary of Transportation, signs them each year, reallowing towns to do this posting. And with this letter, you don't have to do any of the logging on and reporting that your roads are posted or anything on the website, because this is an annual posting and it has the guidelines for like what you can downpost for spring. If you're doing anything more than this for any particular reason for something, that's when you list it on the state website. Grant application. Are you thinking any grants? Or are you
Marla
just gonna...
wanted me to ask you, what is the amount?
So the structures grant and the Class 2 roadway grant,
They are both up to a match of 200,000. So they are, each program is a little different. Class 2 roadway is default a 70-30 match, with the 70% match going up to that $200,000 max from the state side. And then with all of your boxes checked, which that piece of paper you just handed me that, and a network inventory, which counts as like your vtculverts.org is an inventory of your culverts in town, and then like the MRGP is an inventory of your segments. So with those, it checks the other box. So that brings your match up to an 80-20 for the Class 2 roadway, but it still maxes out of that $200,000 mark. So that would be basically a project estimate that's $250,000 or more. You'd be getting that full. It's based on actual accrued costs, but if you submitted invoices showing that you spent that $250,000, you would get $200,000. If you went above $250,000, it'd still stay at the $200,000. And if it was lower than that, it would drop to whatever that 80% matches of it. And then the structures grant with those boxes checked goes from a default 80-20 up to a 90-10, which used to be nice. Now structures seem to just cost that much more, so you hit that $200,000. Pretty much, if you're doing a full structure, you're going to max that out every time. The other thing you can use that grant for is any bridge component. So whether it's the railing on the bridge, if it's some scour protection at the base, any spalling of the concrete, sounding the concrete and doing any, you know, abutment repair, that can be used for that. You know, so you can put in a grant for $60,000 to cover the cost of a contractor doing that work.
We've been told not to mix grants with FEMA work.
Yes, yeah, so don't. So if you apply for any grants here and it's related to FEMA, I'll just encourage you to wait. So do FEMA first, because FEMA is going to look at these grants as other assistance and they're going to disqualify their assistance. And since it was storm related, you are eligible for those grants. And with FEMA, FEMA is a 75-25 split, and then Vermont Emergency Management steps in for the state and gives another portion there, which can drop it down. I don't know how Kirby sits, but it can drop it all the way down to basically the town share being at 7.5% if all the ducks are in a row. So that's a better deal than my grants anyway. So you definitely want to get that.
And these are only on Class 2 roads?
Yeah, so yeah. So the structures is Class 2 or 3.
Okay.
And then the Class 2 roadway grant is just for Class 2 roads unless your town had 0 state miles running through it. Mm. So that doesn't help Kirby out, because you got one tiny little section of Route 2 which disqualifies you, which is very unfortunate because it is so minor. But I got a couple towns like that. There's 3 towns in District 7 that would qualify for that, and that was a push for made by a representative a couple years ago. I'm guessing that's from an area, or represents an area of a couple of towns that had no state miles anywhere near, and they argued that. I think these towns also had, like the town of East Haven also has a 114 going through it, so they don't qualify, but their Class 2 roadway miles is 0.623 or something. It's just barely over half a mile of actual Class 2, and the rest is all Class 3. So this grant, every time they get one, it drops them way down the list, because we do it based on dollar spent per mile to kind of equal it out among the state. So that, like the town of East Haven, every time they get a grant, they drop pretty much dead last in the list of who's going to get another one.
Right.
But when you look at equitable distribution of that money, they've gotten as much per Class 2 miles as other towns have. Just kind of how it works out. But one of these towns, like, I think maybe even didn't have any Class 2 mileage at one point. So their representatives were like, well, can they use it on this road so they can still participate? And so it passed that rule. Basically, if there's 0 state miles running through your town, you can apply it to Class 3 as well. Why that was the decision of how to change it, I don't really know why it was that ruling, because it worked for that town, and maybe that was just the easiest way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for towns like East Haven, yourself, you were so close to using on your other roads, and then you can't because of, you know, and what's the difference between, you know, a half a mile of state road and 3 miles of state road? It's not your road.
Right.
So, I don't know.
So, state road is not a Kirby road.
Correct. And that's why I don't understand why that was the change, because it's nothing that you're responsible to maintain. So the fact if your town has a mileage of state versus not, it wouldn't be a difference. It doesn't change anything for you. But.
So, question, and maybe if not, yep. doesn't the pain pertain to your... If we have a car accident on Route 2...
Which is state road.
Which is state road. The town of Kirby gets charged for fire department response.
So that's...
Now it's our road.
That's within your
it
town.
It is or it ain't, but...
Right, so the state, we don't have a fire department, and we, so...
And neither do we.
Yeah, so fire department's a totally separate thing, so that is completely different. So every municipality does it differently. So like the town I live in, we have a fire department and an ambulance that serves other towns that don't have one, mm-hmm. and they do that same thing. If they respond to an accident in another town, they charge that town for the response.
But on a Kirby road, I can understand that. But that's not a Kirby road.
Yeah, it's still just within town limits. Not doesn't necessarily have to
that's
do with
that.
That's
kind of what I figured the answer would be. But
yeah, I mean, the same as if the... Would the town be charged... Does the town get charged if they just respond to a house fire?
Yeah.
So if that house fire is on a private road, you still get charged.
Yeah. In Kirby.
Yeah. Because within the town limits, because it's servicing the
right.
Kirby community.
Right.
I think it's... That's outside of the highway world for me, so I don't know much about it. I just know, like, even in my permits, when it comes to dealing with, like, fire districts and their water lines, like, a lot of them are owned by the fire district and have nothing to do with the town. So when something happens and I have to go after somebody for damages to the road, it's I'm chasing this volunteer fire district that's mm-hmm. all volunteer money and stuff, and it's like, you got to pay for this, and, like, you know, I kind of half want to go to the town, but it's also not the town's infrastructure. And
right.
It's fire districts are an odd, mm-hmm. odd thing.
So we're going through a FEMA thing right now where
yep.
The first or second storm, I think it's
both
starting to get reimbursement for both storms.
Yep.
Once we get our reimbursement from them, and we decided to go with some of this grant money. Can we use that grant money after and go back through some, you know, we had some spots here and there to fix?
Yep.
Better.
Yep. So as long as it's a
conflict with that?
No. As long as it's a Class 2 roadway, you can use it for whatever falls in the realm of fixing Class 2 roads. So,
okay.
So a Class 2 road section, the grant is kind of focused on doing resurfacing, repaving,
right.
et cetera. But for some reason, FEMA comes through and they do all the fixes and stuff and they won't pay for... top coating the pavement for I don't see why they wouldn't, but
right.
you know, sometimes they only pay for patches, like, well, it was
yeah.
only damaged from A to B this wide, so they do that patch,
correct,
and then that next year you can apply for this grant and say we'd like to do the whole run of pavement on top to
right.
make it not patched and get rid of
right.
the cracks.
Okay.
Yep, that's perfectly fine.
But
yeah.
we can you're saying they'll get paid from FEMA first?
Yes, do everything FEMA first, get as much from them as you
right.
can,
correct.
And then my grant can help after the
yeah,
fact,
okay.
if anything.
What's the deadline on those grants?
So it's April 15th for these two grants. And then you can do that same thing, that same ideology you can do with your Better Roads grants and your grants in aid. So those aren't managed through my office. They go through the municipal assistance. But that same idea. They are there to fix your roads into compliance.
Right.
And if the FEMA funding doesn't get you there, those grants are still, it's okay. still your road. It still applies. So as long as all the eligibility... as far as, like, type of road and the work. So
right.
for those grants, Better Roads has to be water quality related,
mm-hmm.
which normally aligns with MRGP, versus, like, grants and aid is money spent pretty much just on making connected segments in compliance.
So April 15th is the deadline you had?
For my two.
Correct.
And then for Better Roads, Better Roads is in... September, I think, is when they want those letters of intent. And then for grants and aid, the letter of intent, I think, is due around June 26th, 25th,
mm-hmm.
last week for there. And that, your better, so the other thing, your Better Roads has four categories. So it has your A through D. Your category A is the one that's kind of weird. So it's not for any work, it's for assessment. So if you get awarded a Cat A grant, that's money you can use for paying, you know, your time, Aaron's time, John's time for going out and doing the actual assessment of the roads. Marla
mm-hmm.
seems to do a lot of that, so it pays for Marla's time
mm-hmm.
doing that stuff. And if you have someone in town who maybe you can kind of, so another town asked if they could use some of that inspection money to get a new iPad because theirs is getting outdated and the app's glitching. So like, we just need to update the iPad. Can we use that for it? So I asked that I brought it up to Municipal Assistance and asked, you know, like, this iPad is equipment used for doing the assessments. Like, does that qualify for the grant? Basically, the short answer was no. The long answer was, if they use someone who's already kind of getting paid by this town to do that work, then the town is getting reimbursed for them doing that work. So then they can turn around and they have that little extra cash to buy the iPad. So basically, that money kind of bought it, but it wasn't like, you didn't send me the receipt for it type of thing. And then the other three categories get a little bit bigger pots of money and better roads, and they have to be more specific projects, you know, as far as water quality. The grants and aid is those ones where we're going to work on these three connected segments and bring them up into compliance. They need A, B, and C, so you send a letter of intent saying, here's the area we're looking to work on, and here are the different functions we need to improve for it to be compliant. And you send that letter of intent, and it's like kind of almost, I think it's a set dollar amount per like miles you have in your road, in your town for those roads, is how much you get. And it's basically that money's there for you to get every year as long as you show the intent of where you're going to use it. So it's always a good grant just to get every year. So then John, basically, it supplements his budget to do that MRGP work, which is work he's already doing. You know, that whole program's like a big brother thing where it's like, oh, now we're going to watch you do the stuff that you already need to do. You know, you already need to make sure your roads drain and all that. And here's a little bit of guidelines we're telling you to do, which match their codes and standards. So it's all stuff that essentially you're doing. They're just keep an eye on it and then also charging you $500 or $1,350 every year to watch you do it. Which, different agency, I won't get much into them. But So those are later in the summer. This one's April 15th for the Class 2 and the structures. And like the Class 2 roadway. So the structures grant is for any culvert that is 36 inches or larger.
Okay.
So that's what makes it qualifying, and then it has to be on a class 2 or 3. So you can't use it on a class 4 road, even though you are statute, you have to fix those structures. Mm-hmm. This grant doesn't work for that. Your class 2 roadway grant, so any class 2 sections, and if you are going to be paving a section or resurfacing a section, you can't necessarily go through and do all the supplementary work as the grant, but if you resurface the road, so you add a couple inches of gravel and grade it as part of the project. That's kind of the main part of the project, and then in that section you can do guardrail, you can do any culverts that are under 36, so not 36 or larger, but anything that is, you know, 30 inch, a 24, an 18, anything that's 15 that you're going to bring up to 18 inch, you can do all that work in it. Ditching, all that is reimbursable as long as kind of the grants for the resurfacing of this section or paving of it. So it's always good to kind of see what else you need. So if you get a paving, you know, say you're going to pave that section and get it all back together, and there's a culvert or two, or there's a little more ditching that you didn't do during the storm, and you get a quote from Pike, and they're like, oh yeah, it's going to be $80,000 to come pave this section. You know, you can add another $30,000 of this other work into it while you're there. And even if John's going to do all that work, his time and his equipment hours are reimbursable with that grant. So you might as well get what you can out of the grant while you're there.
If we pull a 15-inch culvert out of the ground, what is the EOT specs to put another one back in? 18 or 24?
18.
18, okay.
Yep. All right. So you put an 18 back in I'll step back on that. So 18 for drainage is the bare minimum. So you can choose to go more than that.
Okay.
In this grant, if you're going to, if say you're doing a class 2 and there's a 15 there and you want to make it a 24, that's eligible in this grant. You know, FEMA is a replacing kind assistant, so that's why that's always a big topic of discussion with them. Mm-hmm. For us, you want to make it as long as it's smaller than 36,
correct,
you can put whatever size you want in, minimum 18.
Okay.
We won't pay you to put in a 15 because that's going against your codes and standards that you adopted.
Okay.
The other part of that is in your codes and standards. I actually have an example of, I don't have yours, but I have one, Wells Rivers, sitting here. So in this, there's drainage, which is that 18, and then anything that is a perennial stream, you should be getting, you know, that's where the H&H studies come in to kind of size it appropriately.
Right.
And then streams that are there most of the time but may dry up in August most years, they're called intermittent streams. So they're not year-round. It's not fish passage because it does dry up, but there's other aquatic life there too. It's not dry most of the year.
That is called the intermittent stream, and those have their own standards right here. So it's an 18-inch minimum for drainage, and then those other stream ones, you use this chart right here. And I can help you get this number. So we have a website that goes through, and it's called streamstats.com. And when you go on that website, it's a little funky if you don't know what you're doing on it, but basically you can zoom into an area and you can, it's a federal website that draws your drainage basin based on topographical maps and stuff. So it calculates this drainage area for you. So if that drainage area ends up being 80 acres, then the recommendation is that it's a 40-inch pipe. And that's based on, you know, being wet most of the year. It's basically saying, well, it's wet most of the year because this much area is draining there. So at some point, every time it rains, all that water slowly comes down, you know. And then they even have background data based on, like, probability of underground springs, you know, daylighting in certain areas. So that all calculates to being, like, kind of this. So there's just this little chart, and this is in your codes and standards that you adopted, and also these pages are all copied in the orange book in the back there as an appendix. So that chart, you get, you know, and you can always call me up and say, hey, this is right, you know, give me a GPS dot on the map and say, can you look at this? It's an intermittent stream. Can we get this size culvert that should be there? And I'll run this and I'll let you know what it is. And that, and this, you know, if it's 36 or bigger, you can use the structures grant to replace that. You know, sometimes it's worth keeping those structures grants for your box culverts, your bigger ones. But who knows? You know, you may do that and it ends up being a 66. Maybe it comes back as an 8-foot culvert. Usually if it's that big, and even says here, by the time you're getting to a drainage area of like 200 acres or more, most likely it doesn't dry up in August. It runs around.
So I'll give you a GPS point. You can tell us.
And that's for those, that's for those ones that are, you know, wet most of the summer and just, but they do dry out at some point, you know, on an average year. If it dries out by June, July, then it's most likely drainage. You know, so that, at that point, just do whatever you want to do there. And then as far as Class 2 roadway grant, just so you have an idea, I like to just kind of tell everybody where they fall. So the town of Kirby is at, so you're about 8th in line for a Class 2 roadway grant. So depending on who applies, like, I usually tell everyone who's kind of in my top 10 of my 30 towns, like, if you applied, it could be a good chance, because I'll go and I'll tell everybody these top 10 as I meet with them, and most likely not all of them are going to apply. So if you apply, there could be a good chance that you saw a grant this year. If you didn't, I know a couple of these top 10 towns will probably be applying this year, which means that'll probably up your chance, you know, up next year you'll be higher. You're never going to drop farther than that 8th, so you'll just, over time, you'll just kind of keep your way creeping up, as long as the towns above you are utilizing that grant program. And then I know a few towns that are above you probably aren't, because they're, which could be your case too, is they're grant poor, I call it, basically, is with the FEMA and the storms, like, yeah, we don't have an extra 20% to match that grant right now. Some towns that don't have reserves waiting for those projects, or had to use that reserve money to match this storm that no one planned for. So, but yeah, so if you did apply for one, that, you know, you're in that top 10, so I could be awarding that. So,
okay. So if we can't apply for anything by April 15th, which is highly unlikely that we will, and at least all of this year, if not part of next year, is going to be still in the world of FEMA.
So I'd say navigate your FEMA stuff first. You can always apply for the grant, and we can, I can award that kind of in a totally different conversation than anything FEMA. And I can award that grant, and that'll be, so when you get awarded a grant, so the grants that are due April 15th are awarded, you get notice that you're awarded, but the grant becomes active July 1st, and then it runs for two and a half years. So it's, So this year is 2025, so you'll have until 2027, December 31st of 27, to do the work. So you could always get the grant and then not do it next year, and even not wait till the year after to do that. So you have a little wiggle room there. But it does put a timeline on when you kind of have to do it. So if you're not really prepared to do it in those next 2.5 years, then it's worth just waiting. And that comes into play, too. So if you applied for one and you said, yep, we're going to do it this year, and a town that's above you applied for one and said, we're not doing it till next year, I may award yours and not theirs because you plan to do it this year and spend the money, and they're going to wait till next year. Well, then you're not going to fall down the list, so I will approve yours next year when you're ready to do it. And that's why I'm not making a town wait to do a project because they're below this other town.
This is project specific, right? Like, we need to be very detailed about what we're using the money for.
Yes. So this would be, so you'd fill out this form here, this information here. So like for a class 2 roadway grant, you'd be putting in, you know, your latitude and longitude can just be a middle point in there, but you'd be essentially saying, scope of work, you'd be saying from this intersection to this intersection, we plan to do, you know, 4 inches of surface aggregate and redo culverts in the area, fix subbasin spots. You know, you don't have to be like, we're going to do 500 feet of subbase. You'd kind of have to do that if you were just for the estimate. You know, this many cubic yards of subbase, but you don't have to tell me exactly where that is. You just point A, point B, we're doing this 0.6 miles, and here's the scope of what we're going to do, and here's the estimate we compiled of what it's going to cost to do that. That's what I'm looking for. And these grants go through me. So if I feel like I'm missing information, I'll just call you up and say, hey, can you elaborate a little more on this just so
I
know.
How much miles of class 2 road we got?
We have like 25 total miles of road.
Right.
So you should have it on your town map if you got one hanging up somewhere.
Yeah, it should be
that.
In the book in the way I think it was in the book. It told us. So let's just say, like, over here on this road right over here, North Kirby Road, 159
class
North Kirby Road.
Class 3 is 24.29 miles.
Class 2 is 4.01.
Yep. We got a bridge over there that needs to be replaced through FEMA.
Yep.
But there's some sections of that road, like last year, 2 years ago, John went through. And like you took a section of road out and dug it down like 3 feet deep, put rock in there, put the fabric paper in there, and I've noticed this mud season that them spots that he's done ain't muddy. But there are certain spots again on these roads that need to be done the same way that he did.
Yep.
But it doesn't interfere with FEMA money. We can use that grant money to do
those. If it's a class 2,
that's
you
not
can.
Not class 2. That's class 3.
Right.
If it's a class 3, you can use the
better road grant.
Better road as long as you can tie it to a water quality. So if you're saying it's muddy and it's clouding up the water and that water is running right off into the stream, then there, you know, it triggers the hole or choking out the fish, water quality issue or contamination issue, and then you can argue that drainage work there. You know, or if it, you know, falls in the MRGP location, you know, a connected segment, you're saying, you know, part of keeping this in compliance is doing this under drain. They run, the different group runs those grants, so they may get a little more picky about the type of work and be like, well, under drain isn't an eligible cost or something, but you can kind of argue that that is the long-term solution and get in there. If it's a class 2 roadway grant, that's thumbs up for me. Under drain and, you know, fabric and stuff is something that, you know, you get your money back doing it.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So our class 2 road is the Ridge Road?
All the way? A little bit down in, on Severance Hill.
Right.
Yep.
And we have some class 2. That's class 2?
Severance Hill. Yep. So class 2.
No.
We don't have any main road down there, so it's Route 2.
We have properties that have driveways on
so
the side
Route 2,
road, but the driveways aren't ours.
And the Ridge Road down here by the
sand pit.
And this isn't class 2 right here?
No.
That's what I was trying to figure out. But
yeah, your map, that map that Aaron looked at, that would it shows you which ones are
so
which.
So the only class 2 road we got is pavement.
We have 4 miles.
4 miles.
Which is Route 2 and from Concord back to...
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Echo Ledge Farm and this little bit right here.
But that's not our road.
Yeah.
So we really only have Ridge Road.
But you probably, the Class 2 would run, so Class 2's part of like the conditions of Class 2 is it connects communities.
Yeah.
So like your village to another village would be like a Class 2 roadway. So if you had like a East Kirby Village or like East Linden, from here to East Linden would be Class 2 from Route 2 up to the village most likely would be class 2 or at least eligible for class 2. It doesn't mean it is. But that's kind of when it's got to connect a community and be a, you know, like higher traveled roads, so kind of people use side roads to get to that road to get out or get to another place.
Okay.
That's kind of.
So Kirby Mountain Road.
Yeah, so Kirby Mountain Road is the one that goes over to Granby?
No.
No?
Over to back over to Route 2.
Back over to Route 2. So, yeah, technically it could be. In the Orange Book, it explains a little more about it in the statute. Since you have one that goes out towards Linden, they may argue that one.
Right.
So it goes through a committee review when it does it. So they may say, well, this is your Class 2 road to the community, so this one doesn't need to be needed. Mm-hmm. But if you argue, like, well, it connects us to New Hampshire, and
right,
like, it's a totally different community than Linden versus Route 2. You know, they're totally on different sides of community. So you could argue that and everything, but there's a whole process you'd have to go through to do all that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you want this grant application?
I think I already have that, but I think you need this.
So that's the back. That's the so that's the back page of this piece of paper. Nope. So that goes with this paper right here. That's the financial plan, the back of it. So I've got that. So I'll have this, and we can. I'll fill that out here once we're done these other talks. As far as your FEMA, you seem like you are. Do you have a good PDMG? Does it seem like your FEMA person is responsive and helping? And
that would be a question with Keith. I think they are.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he doesn't care for the qualifications of a couple of them. Absolutely.
I think we're in the midst of changing our first bring contact, some guy but in the from one Texas. Over them is remaining the same.
Yeah, so if you have a good supervisor, that always helps, no matter who's below them. But every now and then, they do 3-month stints. Sometimes they're shorter than that because another storm hits somewhere and that's more interesting to them. So, I'm going to go live here for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So they disappear on you. Some come in, they're terrible. Some come in and they're actually pretty good. So like Concord just had one that was really good. And they got him like almost to the finish line. And then they're like, he's like, oh, my stint's up in 2 weeks. I'll try to get all this done. And he got as much as he could. And then they have a new person. And the new person, they said, it had just been a week. And they said, so far it hasn't been bad. We're meeting them. They're actually meeting them later that day when I was there. So they're like, well, we'll kind of know. But they really liked the one they had, and they're hoping this next one isn't. But, like, the town of Walden went through 3 in a row that were worthless, for lack of better words.
You know, our lady didn't know what a culvert was.
Oh, yeah. Some of these people are in that's the worst part of FEMA is you get someone that comes up here and maybe they just started. Maybe they're from Hawaii. Maybe they're from Puerto Rico. Like, they come from wherever. And then they get here, and it's like they read in their binder really quick before they got out of the car, and they don't have any idea what frost does. They don't have any idea what the storm looked like. And the last storm, they just, they spent the last 3 years dealing with tornado storms. Mm. You know, like,
whole
not,
different ballgame.
Yeah, so it's just, to their defense, they just don't have the experience.
Right.
But you need to, like, this is what your job is in these towns. You know, you're relying on, you're the one that's kind of. And that's the other thing with FEMA is they're very much, they want you to compile everything, draft everything, tell them the story, and then go, we'll pay for that, we'll pay for that, we'll pay for that. And, and as soon as you start asking them, well, is this reimbursable and stuff, like, they get a little buttoned up because they're like, I don't know, like, what happened there, and they're waiting for you to tell them something that makes it eligible or not eligible. And they're not really saying, well, it's eligible in scenario A, B, and C, and not in D, E, and F. They're waiting for you to tell them which one happened, and then they're like, no, or yes. So it's like, they're not necessarily trying to trip you up, but they're waiting for you to tell them so they can react accordingly, which how you react to a situation could make something eligible or disqualify it, and like, they're not here necessarily to give you that guidance, but some PDMGs do. Like, I've sat in a meeting last year's storm, especially the one before, the town of Standard got like wiped out, and we're sitting there, and they had a town clerk that worked 4 hours on Wednesdays.
That's it.
That was the whole town clerk, and she was clerk and treasurer, and then they had a select board of 3 people who were all part-time, had other jobs, and they have a road foreman who's 26 years old, and he's the entire crew. And has a backhoe, that's that and a truck. So it's they're like, what do we do? Where do we do it? And everything. So I spent quite a few days over there. So I like went to a lot of their FEMA meetings just to kind of make sure that they were understanding what was going on. And like in the meeting, their PDMG was pretty good because the road foreman, he'd say something and she was like, are you sure? You know, or you sure it wasn't this? And he's like, well, no. And she's like, you sure it wasn't this? You know, she was trying to, like, say the right thing so I can pretend I didn't hear that and I can cover it, you know. And, like, those PDMGs, like, they understand these are communities that were hit and, like, they're people's livelihood. And, you know, and then there's the other ones that are like, well, my binder said that doesn't count. You know, like.
That's why I kind of asked about, like, how specific the project has to be is because we have one bridge that, like, kind of came apart between the storms. So obviously it was damaged from a storm, but
yeah, and that's when you say no.
That's
it was,
where I was
we saw that damage
doesn't cover that.
They're in the storm.
We use it for that, but
yeah.
We
and,
won't know that by April 15th.
Right, and I would. Those are the things where, to FEMA's knowledge, yes, that happened in the first storm. You know, it got worse later, but it was already damaged to the point it needed. You know, the entire bridge was already compromised. That day we found it. It's slowly still falling apart because we hadn't fixed it, but it was fully damaged that day. It needed to be replaced that day. Doesn't matter if the wing wall falls off later. The wing wall was already bad that day. You know, that's the kind of the front you need to have with them because those PDMGs are going to be like, well, it didn't happen in this four-day window. It doesn't count. And that's the difference between FEMA and then like FHWA, which I don't know if you don't have any FAS routes. So like Severance Hill is one, but you don't have any miles on that. Where that's FHWA reimburses that, not FEMA. And FHWA understands, like, yeah, this bridge didn't just randomly fall in 2 weeks after a storm and have nothing to do with it.
Right.
You know, like, they understand that. So they have, like, their dates of the storm, and then you basically have 2 years to find damages that resulted from it. I mean, once you start getting farther out, you have to really have been like, yep, this was a damaged area. We had documentation that it was. The road was saturated. Like, it led to this. You know, it can't just randomly. But, I mean, what they say is you have 2 years to find your damages. But really, if you don't find it in the 6 months, it's a little harder to argue it. But, yeah, like, I mean, things are, those storms saturate your ground, and things shift for 2 months after.
Right.
You know, or you get a light rain that would have never done anything, but it does do something because it's still saturated from that original storm.
Right.
You know, or that original storm did something underneath the ground or
know,
that you don't necessarily see. You know, it totally washed out everything under a pipe and you don't see it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the pipe falls out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, that just didn't happen on a sunny day. Like, it happened during that storm. But so, yeah, so with FEMA, anything you're looking to get reimbursement when they ask, oh, like, when did you find this? We found it that day. You know, within, you know, that day, the next day, whatever their little window is, because we usually have a date, like 4 days of storm. And it, yeah, we found it in that day. We documented it that day. And, you know, Aaron quickly typed something up of, like, you know, add it to the sheet and be like, oh, here's our sheet of everything we found that day. You know, or, and you keep that sheet kind of to yourself until they ask the question so you can make sure it's on there type thing. And you're not lying. It literally is from that storm.
Right.
It's just their technicalities is you don't want to get stuck on the technicality.
You have a 12-foot hole through the center of your road.
And when you have someone that came in from
something happened.
Here. Right. And when you have someone that came in from a tornado, yeah, it either happened that day or didn't. More case, you know, but yeah, if a house just randomly falls over a week later, probably still from the storm. You know, but fortunately that is not how FEMA works. They're very cautious of the money they spend, and more so in later years because the nation has had so many disasters, you know, nationwide, like North Carolina had that huge flooding and landslide, and, you know, so there's so many events happening that they're really trying to be like, let's not, you know, spend money where our guidelines are saying we spend money and trying to keep it for other stuff. So I get they're trying to protect their purse strings, but it's also like the common sense of, yeah, this is because of this, you know, it's still damages that we have to fix, and it's directly because of this event.
Yep.
Some other papers I have, and then I'll let you guys talk. So municipal roads, general permit. So this you can give to Marla if she kind of heads that up. So it's just the newsletter of the year. Chad McMahon took this over from Evelyn, who had taken it over from Jim Ryan's So Evelyn was only there for a short stint, so basically came in, said, I'm Evelyn, I'm going to do all this stuff, and then no one heard from her, and now she's gone. So Chad came in, he's all gung-ho. I'm going to be sending out an email soon that he's going to be doing a round table. I think it's going to be held at the Lindenville Emergency Management Fire Station Room. And it's going to be a round table, so any questions you have relating to MRGP and stuff, you can go there. The representatives, I'll be there. The representatives from Municipal Assistance will be there, so you can always, I don't know if they'll have a time slot to talk about the grants and aid and the better roads, but they'll be there, so you can ask them questions in person. Chad will be there to talk about kind of like the stipulations and help kind of clarify. You know, sometimes this can get a little heavy on the mind about what are we doing, when are we doing it, so that'll help clear up some of that. Even I sometimes, like, reread this, and I'm like, oh, I read that differently than I did last time. Mm-hmm. And, but it's basically, the, you know, like you've got 5 years, and this isn't going away, and that's something I want to make sure all the towns know. There's no finish line for the MRGP and the road erosion inventory. It is just a cycle, so it's basically being built into your cyclical maintenance. And like I said, it's all stuff that, you know, John's doing anyways. Now they're paying attention to it. So every year, basically, it's you're assessing 20% of your connected segments. Of those 20%, you're seeing what is partially compliant or partially meets or does not meet. And you are fixing 15% of those. And then 7.5 of that, so half of that 15%, is the worst ones, your reds. And you're just doing that every year. Some towns like to go through and do their whole assessment every year. So they're doing, you know, 20%, or they're doing their whole town, and they're doing 15% of their entire non-compliant segments every year. And is that better or worse? I don't know. It in my mind, there's pros and cons for it. The pros are, you are seeing a full picture of where your roads sit in compliance overall, versus if you do a five-year rotation, it's 5 years before you're looking at a segment again that could totally be out of compliance, and probably most likely John has it on his radar to have to go do work there anyways. No matter what he does, he should always be marking it on the iPad, or Marla or whoever should be going out and making sure that they record that work, because even if it's not in like the section that you assessed, you still fixed a segment and updated it, so you should get credit for that. So maybe it's she goes in there and writes, quickly does the assessment for what it was, and then redoes the assessment for after the work did, you know, because it could have been green. The last time she did, you know, someone did the assessment, 2 years later it's red, but you didn't reassess it, and John does work there. Well, he just did work to a green segment, and now it's green again. It doesn't trigger the credit. And the credit doesn't mean a whole lot. It's just showing them that you're continuously doing it. So if you're getting that credit, then it's showing that you are active and everything, and that's part of like the check boxes for those better roads and grants and aid things, that you are in compliance with MRGP. So just, you know, it's they understand that this is never going to be, I mean, they're hopeful that every town is going to be like spot on with this every year, but it's just not realistic. And also, this is still a new thing. We're in the second 5 year cycle of this. But the first year was so bumpy, and so many towns still don't really know. And then you have, as you know, select board members rotate, your town crews rotate, your town clerks rotate, you know, some towns more often than others. And so new people come in, I didn't even know we had to do that, you know, so it's a work in progress. But this is the newsletter, the kind of the summary, and I'll leave that here. And then this is the current report, so progress report. So this is available online. So this shows like how many segments you have, so your baseline. So it shows that there's 101 segments of road that were not assessed. So basically those 101 could be connected, they could not be connected. It means they just were never looked at. So those ones should be looked at. And then originally for the baseline, so that was the, you know, 7 years ago at this point, the does not meet, you had 87 ones that did not meet. You're down to only 14 that do not meet now. So that's showing, you know, Marla or whoever's been putting those in there, getting the credit form and everything. Unfortunate part with this is you get hit by a storm, you get hit by mud season, everything, you know, part of these ones that you've already fixed could already be out of compliance again. And that's why it's an ongoing thing. It's like you're never going to get to the point where they're all in compliant. And if you do, that's great for a couple months until
mud season hits or storm
hits. And it changes that. But this is your current progress report. One thing, when they originally did the baseline and did the original segments, they showed connected segments as what was within that 300 feet of an open waterway. You know, they're 100-foot segments, and they have to be within 300 feet of this open water source, and that's what deemed them connected versus not. The more this has been brought up and discussed, they are allowing towns, so you may have a stream here, and then you have three segments here that are all connected to that stream. And then that fourth and fifth segment are not connected, but maybe they're uphill. So their drainage directly goes through these bottom three segments to this stream. Mm-hmm. You know, you come into the thing of like you're supposed to daylight water every so many feet and everything, practices and stuff, but surface flow, that water may flow down the hill because, you know, you don't crown your downhill slopes and stuff, so that water does affect that these segments anyway, so they are allowing you to go through and add segments, make them connected, double-edged sword. They're now jurisdictional in the permit, so they're segments that you have to pay attention to and do things versus the non-connected ones. And John may be doing work on both of them every time, no matter what. The only positive is now those segments are eligible for those grants, for those grants in aid and those better roads. So now you have a little more money to supplement that work there. So you got to navigate if that is worth the money to do it, having those extra segments, because now it's a little more time to assess. There's more segments to assess. So it's definitely two sides to that. Mm-hmm. But they are allowing towns to add those in there and basically argue like, well, it is connected because that water drains right to this segment, which drains into this river. So therefore, it is connected.
Correct.
Versus if you had a turnout or something, then it's going through this field before it gets to water. So it's not, nope, it's not connected. You know, so, but if there's segments that you have that are non-connected right next to connected ones and they cause you a lot of pain, you know, I would look into that. Well, is it affecting these other segments? Because then you can claim them and have a little more grant money to work through those sections. But there's also only so much grant money. So is it helping you or is it just spreading it thinner on the ones you already have?
Right. But,
and speaking of grants and other things, this is a new updated Show Me the Money guide. So it's pretty much all the same grants. There may be a couple things within the grants that changed in there, but most of it is just updated contact information for each of these grants and everything. I went through and I jotted my name and number and email down on the ones that are district contacts, just because this comes from Municipal Assistance and they send it to all the districts, so they only put, you know, contact district office versus any of our individual contacts. So I jotted my name and number down in those just so you knew that was me.
Perfect.
So you have that, and it has the contacts. They've swapped over for your better roads. Used to be Alan May. Dan Judkins now manages that, kind of did a double fill for a while, so Dan could kind of learn from Alan. Alan just retired this past winter, so now Dan's doing that, and he's a pretty smart guy, pretty up to date and all of that.
Alan retired the day after he told us that our grant that they had come here to approve didn't qualify for reimbursement. That was good timing.
Came out with a bang.
Yeah.
And then your grants and aid. Ashley is still there. She kind of heads it up a little bit, supported by Elise. It used to be Christine was doing it, supported by Ashley. So now Ashley's kind of moved into that lead role. And Elise Grout is now supporting her, and Christine retired. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the contacts, I think, are mostly the same.
Okay.
So that's all I have. For you, I think... Oh, there's one more piece of paper. I'm just gonna look at. So you are all compliant with your MRG reports. And a couple towns on my naughty list there that hadn't turned their report in. Everybody paid their fee, but not all the reports were submitted. But looks like you had yours submitted, so you're all set there. And you're not even... You're the only one... One of three that are good on this list. So basically your codes and standards... There was a section of codes and standards that were a little off. So there's a section on the codes and standards that talks about supplemental standards. So when you fill out the 2019 code standard, and you can always update these at any point. But you circle these yes and no's on these, and then there's a section right here for date of adoption of Appendix C. That Appendix C is if the town wishes to go above and beyond things that are outlined in these minimums. So if for some reason, you know, you want all of your culverts to be 24 inches, not 18 inches, you adopt that as a town policy, signed off and everything, and that, you know, that policy adopted by the town is added to the back of this as an appendix, and you write the adoption that you added that appendix in. You wrote that you didn't have any, so there's nothing currently, so you're just abiding by these. Sometimes we're like, oh, I like that. You know, we want a bigger culverts everywhere, you know, and then and that would qualify because it's adopted code standards, that would qualify for reimbursement from FEMA to replace it with 24. But also comes with the fact that you're going to buy 24-inch size culverts every time, which are more money. So, but if you were to do anything above and beyond, you can adopt it and have it signed in with this. And therefore, in events, which I'm hoping are few and far between moving forward, you know, it's recognized by FEMA for reimbursement. Because the FEMA does recognize the town road and bridge standards as eligible reimbursement costs. They don't count them towards damage costs, but they count them towards eligibility for replacement. And then the other thing that I was talking to the towns about is, so class four roads, they're always a hot topic. In towns, per state statute, you are only required to do bridges, structures, culverts on class four roads. You have the right to make those open waterways if you wish on class fours, and put water bars in instead of a culvert. The town road bridge standards, just because we probably will be seeing a new version of this in the next couple years, and who knows what it'll look like, but on here, section 2, class 4 roads, you have your connected segments here, which only allows you to circle yes because MRGP tells you what you need to do on there, and then for your non-connected segments, you have a choice of yes or no. So for class 4, you guys have circled no, so you are just per state statute, that's what you have to abide by. If you had circled yes, there's a paragraph in the back right here for the standards for class 4 roads. So if you had circled yes, basically it means that you have to stabilize any areas of gully erosion with the practices described above, or equivalent practices, disconnection practices such as broad-based dips and water bars may replace cross culverts and turnouts. So basically saying, per statute you can still make it open water crossings, but if you have any gully erosion, so that's anything like 12 inches or deeper ruts and stuff, that the town does have to address those. So Kirby does not. So if there's ruts in there, like, that's not something you need to address. But I'm just bringing it up because the towns, there's quite a few towns that did circle yes there. And we had always been going under the impression that they didn't have to do anything. But
what
technically they did.
For circling yes? Who knows?
Just, I don't know. And I don't know that towns realized what they were doing. Because even Shauna, because I was reading this because it came up with FEMA. Because one of the towns was like, well, our codes and standards, we have to fix the erosion. So, you know, the storm made erosion, and so that should be eligible. You know, and we'd always been like, well, no, like, you, state statute, you don't have to and everything. And then one town, like, showed me that. They're like, well, right here it says we have to. I was like, I have not read that like that before. And, you know, most of these actually that are on file are only the first and second page that you signed and not the following pages. But it's in there. And so I brought it up to Sean and I said, can you read this and interpret it, you know, the way you, because she was kind of, she helped draft this and everything, and she goes, yeah, I mean, that is what that's in there. So if they circled yes, they adopted a code and standard that the state manages, saying that they do have to fix this color erosion. So I said, so that can be an eligible FEMA cost, because it is part of their codes and standards that are recognized, and they're doing this work. So that's why it's kind of relevant this year, because it kind of came up during FEMA stuff. So right now with Kirby, you don't have to, for better or worse, but so that may be something next time a new version of this comes around. That may be a reason why you do circle yes, is that it's FEMA reimbursable, but then that ties you on to fixing it every time you don't have a storm or a light storm or anything, you know, most of the year. And I think that's probably part of that old, you know, myth of it has to be passable by a vehicle, you know, but it really doesn't. The state statute doesn't require that. But if you circle that, essentially, you're saying if it's deeper than a foot, then we are going to put some material in it or grade it or something. It doesn't tell you when you have to, so, you know, the towns aren't having to do it every time it shows up. But once a year, if you say, well, we'll grade our class fours once a year, well, that's checking that box of gully erosion. So you're following that standard. But And every town has totally different mindsets of their class fours and what they're going to do on them. Most towns are do the minimum that we can, but some towns have a lot more vocal residents that live on them after COVID and everything. And
well, we have that one at the mountain, but I don't know what'll happen. We didn't do any work to it after the storm, but some volunteers decided to go up and do their own work.
Yep.
And they ripped out a whole bunch of culverts that were there. So, and I have no idea what it looks like. We haven't even addressed that issue at this time.
So
it's pretty much from the top of the mountain down to the Victory side.
Yeah. And it's right above, I know what you're talking about, because it's right at the four-way intersection. It goes up to, it's four ways, and it goes up, and the resident, an older gentleman that lives there and his daughter got involved and helped fix the road up.
No, you're talking probably maybe down here on the Bennett
Road.
This one's up here at the top of the mountain that goes over to Victory. There's only one house on that road, and they go the other way. They go out through Victory, North Concord.
But someone still fixed up the...
Yeah.
So
they brought their own excavator in. They brought their own stuff
in. Which is perfectly fine. Kirby has... You have a permit process for driveways and work in the right of way. So essentially, all that work should have been, you know, should have got a permit and said, hey, we need a permit recording that you're doing this, just so we have documented aware of what's going on. The other thing is that you are responsible for structures on that road. So if they remove a structure...
They need to put one back.
Well, technically, I mean, if they remove a structure and it's not needed, they remove, you know, you no longer have to worry about something because it's not there, it's not yours to maintain. But... Was it needed there? You know, was there a stream coming through and that there's a reason there was a culvert there and now it's going to cause the town issues because if you've got an area...
It's going to cause problems.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe the town has to come in and now bevel it to let it be a water crossing or has to put a culvert back and now that's something where you didn't have... The town didn't decide that this older culvert was bad. This random person did. You know, so that's... That would be the only thing is maybe go up through there and just be like, well, we had culvert A, B, and C and... It does look like we need to put this one back in, or this one, it was drainage. It doesn't seem, you know, this person ditched on the sides. That should suffice, and we're good. We don't have a culvert, and delete it off your culvert inventory. It's no longer a structure. It's been retired.
I don't know all that they did. I was up over there before they did any work, and then the next day, get a call that got somebody up in there with an excavator. So I called them and talked to them, and I said, why are you doing anything to the road? Well, the state told me I could do whatever I wanted to do to fix this road. I said, well, who'd you talk to? Couldn't remember the name.
Yeah. So property owners do have the right to, I mean, it is up to them to fix class four roads if they want to.
This guy was not even a Kirby resident. Yeah, it was an access for him to get to Lindenville.
Yeah. So property owners, it's a thing where a class four road, it's if you want it fixed, that's on you. Because the town, basically my response is the town isn't required to do the work. If you want to do the work because you want it more passable, go for it. You have to talk to the town about their permit process and they need to be aware of what you're doing. You know, that is still their right of way, it is still theirs to manage. But no, they are not responsible to make sure that your sedan gets through or whatever. So that's my response to people, but you know, depending on who their state contact is, like some states be like everybody through the state has their version of the statute and, you know, knowledge has been passed around, but I always try to make it, when I speak to a resident, make it clear that, you know, that is town right of way. They are not required to do anything. They're in their rights to leave it how it is and stuff. If they choose to do something, that is the town's choice. But they also manage the work being done. So most likely they're not going to care if you're going and improving the road, but they may care if you're ripping a culvert out or you're doing something else. So, you know, that's why that permit process is instituted in most towns. I only have a few that don't have it. And that's just a way for you to kind of control what's going on and everything. And, and essentially you can follow up with them and say, hey, you did unpermitted work and that is considered damages to the road. You know, usually if they're doing improvements, it's not worth it. Maybe they save the town a little bit of money and we just got to put a culvert in to make it good. But town can navigate that how you see fit based on each situation.
We can assess it.
Yep.
we got bigger problems than that.
Yeah, and the nice thing is when you know, letting the property owners do that work and recording in a permit, when someone else on another class board, well, the town wouldn't fix that. Well, we didn't. The property owners took it upon themselves to do it and got a permit to do the work.
Nobody on the road. Yeah. That's the thing. It was just, it was an access for this one person to be able to leave Victory and get to.
Yep. Well, and still, they're, even though they're not a Kirby resident, they say, no, it was private resident, local residents, or, you know, a resident of Burke decided that they wanted to fix that road up, and they got a permit to do so. It's a Class 4 road, so we weren't going to do that work, because that's, as soon as you do work on one Class 4 road, then every other person that lives on a Class 4 calls you up and say, mine's next, right? Yeah. You know, so.
Right, you're right.
So letting them do that permit work, then that, they're like, yeah, we didn't do that. We don't do that. If you want to do that on your road, then you can follow the same permit process that this person did. You know, so that kind of helps keep that face there.
We'll know more this summer.
Yeah, so maybe worth going up there next, you know, come this summer when things are dried up and you get a, you know, you get a good brainstorm coming, drive up there and just make sure that wherever those culverts were pulled out, because it, as long as that culvert's still kind of on your Vermont culvert inventory, it's still technically there. It's still a culvert that's on your inventory for you to maintain. Mm-hmm. So if someone ripped it out, you know, that's mm-hmm. still yours to kind of fix and put back. If it's not needed, then you document that this culvert was pulled out and retired, not needed, because you have the right to do that. And even after, you know, someone's like, well, this needs to be here. If you don't think so, then you just document that it was pulled out and retired at that point and move forward. You know, you don't have to go put it in and then pull it out or anything if it's not needed. But if it is something needed and this random person pulled it out and it was a good culvert, like, you know, was it damaged, was it not? Is it sitting in the driveway? Yeah. Okay. I'll go through this real quick and fill it out. If you don't have any other questions, I guess. If you have anything more, feel free to ask.
I got a quick question.
Yep.
So on a Class 4 road, and somebody goes in and does the driveway, and does the road, puts culverts in, but all that drainage comes into our Class 3 road. Do we have any requirements to that point?
Yes. So you're still, that drainage still matters in your Class 3, and that's why that permit process is good, because you can document right in that permit. So they added a culvert.
Yep.
It's not on the inventory. The town didn't decide that it was needed or be added. That permit is documenting that this is a privately owned culvert by so-and-so, and when it is plugged, it is damaged or something, it is not town's responsibility. So that statute saying you have to fix a culvert, that's not our culvert to fix. It's a private culvert that this person put in, and here's the permit documenting that they put it in and it's their responsibility.
So what if they don't put a big enough culvert in that Class 4 road and it plugs and the water comes out on a Class 3 road?
So if it's the point where it's not big enough and it's plugging and everything, then most likely there's a need for a culvert there. And that would be the town should be putting that culvert in that Class 4 anyways.
Okay.
If this person took out a larger culvert and put a smaller one in, then I'd go after and be like, hey, no, you need to, you know, we'll provide the culvert, but you got to swap them back, you know, or something. And that's the hard part, is doing that after the fact versus catching them up there with the excavator saying, whoa, what are you doing? You know, and that's why that permit process is good, because you can be right there and have those conversations ahead of time. And if they're like, well, I'm not going to do that, well, then you're not going to do anything, right?
Correct.
Here. You know, like.
Because we still maintain them culverts on that road.
Correct. Yep.
So if we feel that they're not putting a big enough culvert in, we need to address that.
Right, because that is statutorily your responsibility to maintain that culvert, especially if it's part of your inventory.
Okay.
If they're just putting a random culvert in because they wanted an extra culvert somewhere,
right,
then you document that that's not the town to maintain, that's not the town's fix. So if it plugs and goes over or something, like, that is on that property owner. You call them up and say, hey, your private culvert you have plugged up and caused us damage when you plan to fix it or buy a couple loads of gravel.
Right.
You know, like, that is part of that. But you have that all documented out in that permit process and recorded on the town files. So that's your backup, that this is theirs and their legal responsibility.
Do we even have a permit process when they did that work? On the better road?
No.
We didn't do a permit process up
there. No.
Yeah, so I would go up there and I would still institute a permit. So I'll go up here and be like, here's what you did. Here's the work that you did here. We're going to document it in here on this permit. And if they're not willing to sign it and stuff, then you action to say, hey, you did unpermitted work in the town, we have a permit process, and that's your argument. If it, you know, if you want to get...
We did give them, like, verbal permission in a select board meeting.
To fix their own road?
Yes.
Right.
I thought we were talking about Mud Hollow, not Bennett Road.
No, that's what I was stating.
You are. I brought that up earlier.
We have a problem up there sometimes, and that's what I'm talking about. But it wasn't permitted. So how does that work?
Can permit after the fact. I just go up there and say, hey, you know, we didn't have a permit in place. We need to have one in place for this work that you did to capture what was done. You know, and that is to, you know, A, maybe take liability off him if it's something that the town's okay with, you know,
right.
Or vice versa. So you say, we'd like to do a walkthrough about the work you did so we can capture it in a permit. And as you're walking, say, hey, this culvert wasn't supposed to be here. There's no need for it to be here. This is yours to own. And you go through that. And then, you know, if they're not willing to sign that or agree to certain things, then you do have you have that stance of, it's tricky if you gave verbal permission.
Mm-hmm.
What did you give permission for? You know, navigating that would be hard. But, you know, that's your stance saying, hey, we didn't approve this work. You know,
mm-hmm.
We never said you could put a culvert in here. So that is considered a damage to our road and to our right of way. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was, like, permits for road work. I just knew we did permits for driveways.
Yeah. So
right. Well, my only thing is they go to a driveway.
Road access permit.
Road access. So yeah. So for the state, ours is called a Section 1111 permit, and the Section 1111 protects towns as well. So that state statute is for all state and municipal right of ways.
Right.
So in your permit process, you know, maybe it's update the language of it or the form of it to reference that Section 1111, and that's right of way work. So that's what a driveway is. A driveway is considered work in the right of way. So you're not necessarily approving, in those instances, you're not necessarily approving someone to have a driveway or an access. You are, but you're really approving the work that they did in the right of way and agreeing that and capturing that this is maintained by us or not. So they put a driveway in, they put a culvert under their driveway. You know, that permit is capturing, A, allowing them to do the work within the right-of-way, because you control that right-of-way, and then B, let them know this driveway and this culvert that you installed is yours. We are allowing it to stay in this right-of-way, but as soon as it's affecting our road, affecting anything, we have the right to remove it or approach you to do corrections to it. You know, that's what that captures.
So really, should we collect, like, a certificate of insurance when they're doing...
Yeah, it's basically what it is that you're capturing. So if someone comes in and puts a, you know, 50-foot-wide... driveway pad, no culvert in it, and now you got a pond up the road on someone else's
right.
property because the water can't drain through. Like, that's where that permit says, hey, you know, that it's you're controlling what they're doing, so it doesn't affect everything else and it flows right. And then you're adding, you know, that it's protecting that stipulation, saying like, this is on you or it's not. So every town does that a little different. So like
mm-hmm.
for the town of Danville, they do the work, so they make the property owner buy the culvert and the material. And then they install it and maintain it moving forward. So that's how their permit process is written. So they will flush it. They will do what they need to, ditching around it. When it's time to replace it, I don't know if I don't know. I don't know if they then go and the property owner has to buy a new culvert or if they replace it themselves. But, you know, like initially, when one's put in, that the property owner buys all the material and everything. The town does the work. So it's set up the way they want it to. And they maintain it moving forward. So that's the way they decide to do it. The state, we don't do that. Like, all culverts and driveways are owned by the property owner, and when there are issues, we contact the property owner. That shoots ourselves in the foot as many times as it doesn't, because the property owners that are nice and do the work anyways, you call them up, they do it, and the property owners that give you the middle finger anyways. And then it's such a long, involved process to, like, sue somebody. We pass it up the chain, and some of them work, and some of them don't, and
yeah.
It all really depends on our legal section, how much time they have to worry about.
Right.
You know, this is very small for the stuff they're dealing with. And so it's...
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we bark really loud and then it doesn't go anywhere, and sometimes we bark and it does go somewhere. So
mm-hmm.
It's always hard not having that backup behind you when you're
mm-hmm.
saying stuff. Your fiscal year is... Is it July to June, or is
January.
It January? Okay. So since yours is January to December, you're aware that you will only see half of your town aid this year. because you got the first two payments last.
Yes.
Payment. Okay.
And that happened the year before too.
Yep. Did you carry that forward as a carried over cost or add it to a appropriation or anything, or did you spend it? It doesn't really matter as long as the town's aware of that their money's cut in half this year.
I mean, for our budget this year, I planned on only half of.
Okay, yeah, so you just supplement it with taxes. So some towns are like, what do you mean we're only getting half? And I'm like, well, you know, how your fiscal year falls, it was last fiscal year, and then some towns put it into their highway reserve and pulled it back out as a payment out of their appropriations this year. Some did a carry forward, and then some just spent it because they needed to spend it as matches, and they just, like, kind of, they just realized that we're going to have to supplement extra taxes this next year to continue the budget needed. Yep. Do you have, Aaron, do you have a copy of your revenue for the highway? The line in here that's general highway maintenance, resurfaces, and construction, $115,000. Is that general?
That's our general highway budget, and then there's a winter maintenance.
Okay, so that's just like your summer budget, non-winter.
Yep.
Okay. Is there any specific projects in that?
No.
Okay. Your new equipment dash roads, $5,000. Is that just for?
That's like if John needs a new welder.
Okay.
find that piece of tin.
I went and got it.
Jump back over.
Yep.
I can't find that goddamn.
I don't have any fun of that.
Picture.
I took a picture of that.
Was it on the Linden community page?
It's on Linden.
Wasn't it like Joe Santar or something? It's one of the guys that works for Casella. I think it was on the Linden community page.
John, the tank will not be filled until he calls or someone calls and reestablishes it needing to be filled.
State hold harmless payment and pilot program, is that highway related?
No, that's okay. All tax stuff.
Okay.
You didn't know how big that culvert was.
No, but my theory is they had to do a hydraulic test on each one of those. Because it's the same brook that comes from the top.
Right.
So I'm assuming that it met the hydraulic test, obviously. I would like to look at our hydraulic report on that again. Did I think that was in there as an option? I know it was.
Yeah, I asked him what size it was, but nobody responded. It's oval, kind of.
Yeah, that's for the structural part of it. You know, it's almost like almost like a squashed culvert for structural wise.
Thank you.
I just drafted up the financial plan. I'm here for your signature, and I'll type it up and send it back to you, Aaron, typed out.
Okay.
But if you want to sign it, it's basically it's your state aid, your town raised taxes to supplement your state aid. For your other revenues, I did put in this deficit that was on the revenues. So the taxes are a little bit higher than your entire budget, and that's kind of the supplement that deficit that's carried over. And then down here below, you've got your winter maintenance, your non-winter maintenance, and then special projects, so like appropriations, payment appropriations, your class 4 road, and your town garage. So that's kind of like the fuel and stuff that's all related more towards that building. I pulled that out because this number here for your non-winter maintenance, if an event were to happen that isn't a FEMA declared event, that same as that class 2 and structures grant, there's a third part of that that's an emergency grant. And that is for, you know, one-off events that happen, you know, to small communities that kind of help, you know, a big surge of water came through and wiped something out. So, like, for instance, like, town of Corinth had a beaver dam that was upstream. The beaver dam broke through and it wiped out a culvert. So they used that to, you know, to cover $60,000 to replace the culvert because they weren't ready for that to happen and it wasn't big enough to be FEMA. So part of your eligibility for that grant is your threshold for damage is 10% of your non-winter maintenance budget. So pulling these out helps shrink this number to give you a little better eligibility if something were to happen, that number. So for you, it is, you know, 10% of that. So you're looking at, you know, $1,755.50 of damage you have to meet, which you can meet pretty, you know, sure. One culvert meets that.
Yep.
You know, we're probably not going to approve one culvert, but just you lower that number to try to help out.
Okay.
So that's that. Signatures on the back page by that and date it. And then we'll sign this and send it back to you when it's done.
This must be the same one right
here.
I'm going to head to another town meeting I have today. But again, if you have any questions, or if you've got my number, so feel free to call or email if anything comes up or you think about something later that you didn't ask today. I am available whenever. So let me know and I'll try to get you an answer as soon as I can.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about these aluminum structures that these towns are putting in? Or like, I don't know, like the brick road down here, the town one is putting in these here. It's an aluminum box culvert, I guess is what you call it.
Yep.
What's the deal with these? You guys put them in the state too?
So we are not using them as a state, but they're something that's fairly new, and a few towns are doing them as replacements for FEMA. And they kind of came out because box culverts are hard to get right now.
Yeah.
Because of the storms. So that they kind of just surfaced, so I don't really have a lot of experience or knowledge about them just yet. Per what I've heard, that they're engineered similar to a box culvert and have just as good of a life
as a
concrete that's poured nowadays versus concrete that was poured 50 years ago. It seems like that would have the same amount of lifespan.
H&H test right here.
Yep.
This is any similar structure that fits site conditions should be considered.
Yeah, or could be considered.
Could be, yeah.
Yep, so basically when they do these, they like to give you a couple options with the details of each.
Yeah.
But if you bring this to an engineer, so you bring it to Ruggles, you bring it to somewhere else, and you say, you know, we are interested in this one, and then we also are interested in maybe a aluminum box culvert or something, and they would just design it to fit the same criteria.
Correct.
And that is perfectly fine.
Square feet,
yeah.
The whole nine yards.
So the town has the right to put in whatever they want to.
Yep. Right.
This is just what you kind of have to meet for passage.
Right.
So is if you put in one of those structures that meets the passage, this is all based on the water in, the water out.
Yep. As long as that piece meets that 56 square feet.
Doesn't necessarily care what the structure is. The only thing is if it recommends wing walls, then it's probably good to put them. Other than that, if the box lets that much water in and that much water out, and then they usually have a little bit about aquatic passage, if it should have some baffles in the bottom to slow water down, et cetera, in there. But those, as far as I know, those incorporate the same baffles. They bolt right to the bottom, and they have that same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know about... They haven't been around long enough for me to know about. My only worry about like baffles with that instance is like how thick that base is, and then like if they're riveted down, if they're welded down, does they get torn out quicker than maybe a baffle on the concrete pipe? Or
the ones I looked at were all welded in.
Yep. But then a large, you know, 8-foot corrugated metal pipe, they're getting welded in or riveted in also in that structure. So
correct.
Yeah. So it's really
okay.
Just a new option on the on the options list. So I don't have an opinion about them yet. I haven't seen actually any installed and working, but the ideology of them seems fine. You know, if that durability's there, and the companies that are making them are saying, it's gonna, it can hold up this many pounds and fit these criteria, then I guess you got to believe that as much as the precast box coming from that plant.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you don't need a big crane or anything to put the pier boxes in either.
Right. You know, and this may be, depending on how light these are, it may be something that...
Excavated. Yeah.
So maybe it helps with cost and it helps with time-wise to get them.
Right.
But, it doesn't disqualify it from anything.
Right.
Especially if it's related to that. If you were putting one in, a FEMA, you're getting everything hydraulically sized, so they're recommending that based on the sizing versus, like FEMA always has the thing where you got to put back what was there. But when it comes to large pipes like this with the streams, that kind of goes out the window a little bit because we can't put back what was there because the FEMA is also recognizing this as an increased, eligible cost. So
as long as that structure meets the hydraulic test for that square feet, we're good to go.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And it's not necessarily like the H&H memo isn't what's saying that. It is your codes and standards saying that you're putting things in that follow stream alterations permits, and that's the overriding thing that's like recognized is like that stream alteration permit, which then uses that H&H study to show what would fit the category of the alteration permit. So that's kind of what FEMA wants to hear versus like, because there's the whole concept of like the guiding house and stuff. It's like, these towns are saying, H&H said we had to put this in. Yes and no. That's true, but not true at the same time. If the stream alteration per A&Rs, when you sign your codes and standards, those are in conjunction with A&R, and part of that is saying that you're meeting perennial stream needs, and that's referencing the stream alteration permit, which is A&R's overriding kind of like statute. You need to follow this, and that H&H is the tool that helps navigate what meets that criteria.
Gotcha.
Basically, it's yes, the H&H study supplements this. This is what should happen.
Right.
But it's that stream alteration permit is what's requiring you to do that. And that's what FEMA needs is like that requirement.
So all the culverts that we outsized for the FEMA mess, FEMA will pay for what we had there before.
Yeah, if it doesn't have an H&H, if it's not a stream, so it has to be a stream to follow with the H&H, and then if it's intermittent stream, FEMA recognizes your code and standards. So anything upsized to 18, if it wasn't, will be a covered cost. And then anything upsized because it's an intermittent stream and it fits that drainage system requirement. So like you put a 4-inch, 48-inch pipe in there and it met that acreage where a 48-inch pipe is what's recommended per your codes and standards, that's an eligible cost. If it's a drainage area or... a drainage culvert, it's not a stream any time of the year, and you put a 24 in, there was only an 18 or a 15 before, FEMA is going to cover the 18 because that's the minimum that the standards require, and then the town would soak up the cost of increasing the culvert size, but as far as the work, the excavation to put it in, all that, as long as that culvert was damaged 50% or more, they should still be covering all that cost because those are the same costs accrued as putting the 18 in versus putting the 24 in. So the town should only be eating the cost difference per linear foot of that pipe difference.
Yeah.
A lot of times the PDMGs are like, well, no, it's disqualified because it's this. And you argue, well, yes, the actual physical pipe is. But the cost of the 18 and everything is still eligible. So we're asking for that coverage. And then we're eating the cost to upsize a little bit on our own accord. Yeah.
Okay.
But. Any other pressing questions before I head out?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for meeting, and again, let me know if you need anything, and Aaron will shoot you some emails with some of this stuff once I get it signed off and prepared. And
who is our new A&R guy?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't either. I heard a rumor they hired somebody, but Jaron hasn't told me who it is. So Jaron's okay. Kind of the supervisor, so I'm still kind of sending people his way, and I figured as soon as he doesn't want the email coming to him, he'll let me know who to send it to.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. So I was a little lost
on that too.
Yeah, an email, and Aaron did have an out-of-office reply for a while that basically just said, send it to this email address, because he was kind of having some of the other region ones kind of grab some of it as needed.
Okay.
But I think he does have someone, he's just trying to get them up to date before he throws them in the deep end. So.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Okay, back to the equipment discussion. We need, we're going to get some prices.
Mm-hmm. So back to my, I did go out and meet with them guys up there in Newark. Only because I thought that was a pretty good comparable town to this town, with the hills and the snow and the blah, blah, blah. They bought a new Western Star. They did have some motor trouble when they first got it. So they had to borrow a state truck for the winter. But Charlie Boys fixed it under warranty and the whole nine yards. Talked about a few different things with what they had for a truck. Tires were 22.5, 12-wire 22.5s that came with the truck. John would like an 11-wire 24.5 to come with the new truck when we decide. They wanted the single frame on that truck. It's just a thicker frame. And that's why they went to the 12-wire 22.5s.
Thicker and taller.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's 2 inches taller.
Yeah. They recommended, they dealt with AGT, I think it is, ATG
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, ATG.
They like Charlie Boys better. They had a better price and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I think we'll better call Charlie Boys and get a price on the truck. I did go over the automatic versus the standard with him. He hates the automatic. He says the torque converter in it will unlock and your RPMs will go way up, which causes them to spin halfway up a hill. And they have no backwards, the Jake brake won't come on backwards on an automatic, and they have no control over the truck. He said if he had to do it all over again, he would go with the 18 or whatever they offer for transmission. He doesn't like the automatic. So just off reference of what I was going with them guys, I mean, them guys have been, the kid's been there for quite a while. A few other things with the truck, but anyway, it's just something to keep in mind, I think. John would like a standard. That was one of the reasons why I asked him about the standard versus the automatic up there. If they had a choice, what would they go with? He said, obviously, the biggest thing was the automatic was the torque converter unlocking. He says there's just no control over what you can do with the automatic. Finally, that's what I did.
Good.
Most of what I was able to find out in the specifications, John would just soon have an 8LL like the red truck had and so forth. And regardless of whether, for instance, International uses an X15 Cummins in the 500 plus horsepower, same as the Detroit, The torque specs of that exceed the 1650 to 1700 that an 8LL runs at, or at least that's what I was told, and which then the only other transmission is the 18-speed that is usable with the engine, the horsepower, and the torque. I guess my concern in talking with John is that, you know, the automatics have pluses and they have minuses. The thing, in addition to the things that Mike said, if you start the bottom of the hill with a full blade of snow and load of sand on, and you get into the hill, if just before you get into the hill or whatever, the automatic's going to want to sense it has to shift up. So it spends the rest of the time shifting up and down, which raises holy hell with everything, and basically prevents you from being able to have a good smooth transmission up the transition up the hill. I briefly mentioned to John about the fact that International is still in the municipal truck situation. I was intending to get approximate numbers from them as well, but I get a distinct impression from John that he doesn't want an International. With that in mind, I have an additional concern of going forward. I mean, I'm under the impression that John's talking about retiring at the end of the year or somewheres in that time frame. So now we end up with a situation where somebody can or can't handle a standard transmission, or we flat out make that a contingency if you're going to come to work here. The vast majority of the town and state and everybody else has long since gone with Allison Automatics. So I'm not sure where the concerns fall in that case. Do we shoot ourselves in the foot because our current town road guy wants a stick? Or do we all think that the stick is the better way to go, and that when and if John retires, and that simply is we have a manual transmission truck, and that's what you're going to have to have to work for us.
What's the blue one now?
Automatic.
It is an automatic.
Yep.
All I know is the town of Linden, with their automatics, have had four trucks off the Brown Farm Road due to the automatic situation going up that road. They've wrecked two trucks on the Brown Farm Road because they can't control what the automatic's going to do. Now, as far as the International versus the Western Star, in my opinion, we've already got a Western Star to begin with. He'd like to set up the same truck as a Western Star, so you got the same filters, the same body, the same chains, the same everything, other than the fact that two transmissions will be different. He doesn't want to have a shop in there with two different filters, two different this, two different that. He'd rather go with the same truck, which is what I would recommend too. As far as the standard transmissions versus the automatic, you know well as I do, they came out with these automatics, what, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And town started trying them because they thought that was going to be the ticket. Town of East Haven's got an 8LL in their 10-wheeler up there. He loves it with the 8LL, Western Star 8LL. I was under the impression you couldn't get an 8LL. You can only get an 18 or an automatic. Maybe that's wrong. I'm not sure.
No, that's correct by today's standards because that truck is an 18 or something like that.
Right.
And it also depends on, it's all entirely dependent upon torque specifications.
Right.
They're now saying that the 8LLs will not handle 500 plus horsepower, 1850 plus torque motors.
Right.
I thought that Fuller made 8LLs higher than 1650 torque, but apparently that's what being told by Charlie Boyce, and that's what I was told by International.
Do we want two different trucks in the garage? As far as name brand goes, International versus a Western Star, resale value, the town of Newark brought it up. Resale value, they were way ahead of the Western Star trading value of they were of an International.
Trading I don't understand value. That statement.
In other words, you're going to get way more money for a trade-in of a Western Star than you are an International. They got almost $60,000 for the six-wheeler Western Star that they drove for quite some time, which they thought was quite remarkable. And then they did the aspects on a trade-in of an International versus the Western Star. The Western Star just brought way more money on trade-in value. Which is another reason why they went with the Western Star, because of the value of the truck down the road.
Yeah. I don't care what truck engine filters, this, that, and the other thing. That, to me, is not, quote-unquote, a deciding factor. I think it's there's nothing, per se, wrong with a Western Star. The Internationals have been historically the primary choice in the any of the municipal or state purchasing setups, but that's because a lot of the other brands never cared to try and compete at that level. So essentially Freightliner cheapened up the Western Star from the standpoint of the type of truck that it was before, which was more of an owner-operator truck than it was a municipal truck. And so now, you know, the Western Star is probably, I mean, at least regionally that I can see, increasing popularity in St. John'sbury's trucks or in anybody else's trucks.
Well, I think once you start your fleet with an International fleet, that's probably what you stick with.
Well, all of the municipal fleets were International fleets for many, many years, so everybody starts changing. I think when International ran into so much engine trouble in their 13-liter, tremendous amount of engine trouble, and they can't get a 15-liter put together yet, and they theoretically have been trying to do that for years. I'm not saying I'm a proponent of one or the other. I just thought from the town standpoint it would be beneficial to know the cost difference. If if the concern of you know, John knows Western Star better than he knows the International at this point. So how much they might have changed inside this, that, or the other thing, don't know. But I don't think that's necessarily a big concern. My only concern was is that just for us to be on the same page for putting a stick in it or putting an automatic in it, going past John's working force.
If you're asking my opinion, what I would rather drive?
Well, no, I would rather drive a standard shift as well. I don't want any part of an automatic. I don't understand the automatics. Most of the problems that are out there existing when the automatics came was because they were an automatic and guys would run around pushing buttons and not let an automatic
do. The biggest thing with an automatic is you have no control of what the truck is going to do.
You do have control, Mike.
You don't have control.
Yes, you do. You have. You can pick gears in an automatic the same way you can pick gears in a standard.
But when the torque converter unlocks, your RPMs go way up, and it causes the truck to spin. With a standard, it won't do that.
Correct, because you control everything.
Correct.
Which is fine. What I said was, I would prefer a standard shift in my mind, especially for around here. If you're going to talk
flat country stuff and whatever, right. it doesn't make shift. 5 cents worth of difference what right. the hell you're driving, right. which is essentially what all the state trucks are.
Right.
They're flat just road. Running on a bunch of paved highway things, and that'll right. be it.
So I think we need to let John write down the specs that he would like.
Mm-hmm.
John is our road man, and I understand he's not going to be our road man forever. But if I go to work for FW Webb, I don't walk in as a truck driver and say, I don't like this truck, I want a new truck.
Mm-hmm.
You got what's there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We're still going to have two trucks. We're going to have an automatic right. and we're going to have a standard.
Right. But we gotta, if we're going to buy a truck now, we need somebody to decide. We can sit here all day right. and decide what we like, what we don't like.
Right.
And we can do this all day. We right. ain't got nowhere.
Right.
Let John put down the specs. We'll get some prices.
Right.
That's all we can do.
Okay. So that's my understanding is he's already done that with Charlie Boyce on a stick.
No. He,
oh, he didn't?
No. Nobody's contacted Charlie Boyce to my knowledge. I know he's contacted...
John has a price from someone, but I don't
AGT. ATG.
Yeah, whatever they're
called. Lancaster?
Yeah. And I did talk to John and said, you need to call Charlie Boyce and get a that, our truck that we have now is from Charlie Boyce.
Correct.
And I said, you got your spec sheet on it. If you like the truck you got, there's your spec sheet.
Change
and the only difference is the transmission.
And I don't know about your axle ratio. That would have to change, I would think.
Right.
To whatever fits
that
better
transmission.
From that standpoint.
Right.
I'm not against comparing some prices.
Oh, I'm not either. I'm not.
We can sit here all day and do this.
Right.
Yeah. It's unbelievable to me that somebody could drive a truck that size but not shift it.
Oh, all day long. more and more because they can't drive.
But I, having get all the Charlie boys, spec the truck out, what he wants for a truck. Jeff, if you feel free, you can get a hold of International.
No, I'm not going to if it's going to, create an issue with
I just
John.
Know that as a road foreman, he doesn't want International. That's what I take from
that's,
him.
That's what I take from it.
Right. So there's no need to, I guess.
So then you can bounce it off of two dealers and see, but I don't think anybody, with the change that's occurred with International dealers, now called Allegiance,
mm-hmm.
and Freightliner dealers called ATG, right. is they're all trying to control as much of the business as possible.
Right.
Therefore, pricing and stuff is no longer anywhere near competitive as it used to be.
But right. what we do need is some more information on getting rid of this red truck.
Correct.
Whether mm-hmm. we bid it, sell it, trade it.
Something.
Whether there's a $30,000 program out there for cash or...
Something. Figure it
or
out.
Or what. Mm-hmm. I did look around, just surfing the internet. I couldn't find a whole lot.
I couldn't.
But I don't know what I'm looking for.
I don't know.
That's
either.
That's a big thing.
I think it's something about about getting rid of it for a cleaner emissions vehicle,
right.
like a cleaner diesel.
Yeah, they essentially want it destroyed.
Stuff, but I couldn't find the exact program.
At which point you got a full
right.
plow setup and body and everything else.
That's yeah. why my question was to him about the $30,000. Special loan or whatever we're going to do. If we're not going to use any of that, my question is, can we just sell the truck to somebody?
Yep.
Be done with it.
Or trade. Never going to have
take it in trade. I mean,
they'll take anything in trade.
International
sure.
will take it in
for
trade. But they're already trying to find, from a dealer standpoint, they can put a reman engine in that truck for a hell of a lot less money.
Sure they can.
We can.
Then
but I don't think necessarily that the Charlie Boyce might just say flat out,
No,
don't want
right.
it.
You guys, that's the question that John can find out if they're interested in the trade of this truck for a Western Star.
That would definitely have to be a question that should be asked.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you want to bounce two Western Star dealers off another...
I mean, if they're going to give us $5,000, $10,000 for this truck, that would be our decision whether we want to trade it in or sell it outright as a
town. Yeah, or have it as a lawn ornament for another two, three years.
put a bid out for the truck, This guy wants to bid $5,000, this guy wants to bid $15,000, well, it is what it is.
If we're going to limit ourselves to the one choice, then I think due diligence would require us to get two numbers.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, get one from Lancaster or whoever. Try have that already. Would be the closest dealer from that standpoint, and then Charlie Boys.
Because I did find out if you do buy a truck from Charlie Boys from Newark, that they still take their truck over to Lancaster to service it.
Really?
Yeah, they have to because they're a Western Star dealer. So I did find that out. Just because we buy it at Charlie Boys.
Oh yeah, they can't refuse.
Right. Doesn't mean that they won't do the warranty work over there. That's where they go.
Right.
So I did find that out.
Well, Charlie Boys did the engine warranty work.
Yep.
And it came from Charlie Boys originally.
Yeah.
No, I would say that if that's what John's going to do, to just turn around
John's
and say.
John's going to love my little whole book of post-its over there.
International is what? Clark's Truck Center now? What is that now?
Allegiance.
So if we do service work on or anything like that on that truck, we have to drive it way over there because there's no other area around here that would work on International that
not
I know
to my,
of.
Not to my knowledge. No.
So that's another thing to keep in mind. Lancaster's not too far from here.
Yep.
So anyway.
Well, I appreciate you guys' knowledge about these big trucks, but it's way over my head.
No, I'm just...
I mean...
I'm kind of going on what John
good.
Says. Jeff knows
trucks. At least we do have somebody that's got some kind of an inside idea what's going on, other than just that one man that drives it. So...
I'm a little unsure on 11R 24.5 versus 12R 22.5. It just makes the truck sit flatter. With the 12R 22.5s, I don't know what that truck's going to do with it. I don't know what the size difference is in those two tires.
Well, it obviously...
they set it up for a reason with the 12R
22.5. They set it up because of the too high a frame.
Right.
Or having a higher frame, taller frame, thicker material, so that you do it in one single frame.
Right.
John originally was of the opinion that... with wings on the sides and everything else, that the double frame is a preferred way to go. Yes and no, just like you say, each has pluses and minuses to it. And the other thing that John mentioned also is he's got a shitload of 24.5 rubber mounted on 24.5 wheels sitting up in the attic. Which all of a sudden go to complete waste.
Well, they go on the other truck. When we already have.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what this does with the gear ratio, you know, 12R, 22.5 versus that. I have no idea. We'll have to find that out.
That would have to definitely be a consideration when you get past the engine transmission, then you get to the rear ends.
Correct.
And the tire size. Those last two are going to tell you what you need to do.
And Charlie Boys can tell us that when he calls in and figures that all out, or whoever. I mean,
I'm not sure who's handling the municipal service stuff over there. I worked there for 2 or 3 years. And
so we're going to go with two different prices on two different trucks. Is that what we want to do, or just stick with the Western Star?
No, I don't. I don't see where.
Just stick with the Western Star. Get John's specs on the truck, and then we can deal with Charlie Boys. We already got
that. We do that, we may end up with a truck sooner than we...
No, I thought you were in disagreement about that double frame.
Well, with the Western Star, they recommend... Well, the town of Newark got the single frame, and there's a wider frame. That's why they're going with the smaller tires, to keep the truck at a... I don't like a double frame myself, because it just holds all the shit inside the frame that you never can get out. Where a single frame, you can wash it out, and you can get everything out of it.
And that's not just with Western Star, that's the exact same thing with International.
Right.
So the price that John got on a truck already, was that a double frame? Or
I think it was single.
I doubt it.
I think it was a single frame. They decided to go with single frame. They just made them bigger to match the double frame specs.
Taller and thicker gives you the same as shorter and two times the steel. Yeah.
So maybe we can have that information by next meeting.
He was talking 9 months over here with AGT, I think it was. I don't know what Charlie's Boys' distance on timeline of a truck is, and that's another thing we got to consider, because 9 months from now is December.
Well, you got, unfortunately, and I think I mentioned it to you before, according to International, one of the outfitters is 9 months behind, period.
Right.
And the only way around that would be to see what the guys in New Hampshire,
who is it moved?
But I know with over here, it's 9 months, and I don't know what Charlie Boys is. So that's
9 months for the delivery of the chassis?
9 months to get the truck to the town, how I took it.
Right.
Set up.
And then how much more time to get in line at the body company?
Well, according to how I took it from John, was it was 9 months for the truck to be done.
Oh, so
brought to here.
You can get it delivered and then drop shipped over
right.
there.
And I think we want to pay attention to that, too, with the pricing of a truck and how long is it? Is it 13 months here and 9 months here and there's $20,000 difference? Well, mm-hmm. we probably want to get the 9 month truck because when this truck breaks, we're done.
Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, other than that, we got this, how much will you give us for it?
Yep,
exactly.
And if not, then you just turn around and advertise it because the body and the plows and all that other stuff, there's nothing wrong with that side of it.
Right.
All right, next select board meeting.
I have one other item that I think should be addressed. We're on a theoretical deadline for tomorrow with Matt and the specs on that job. Now, I had responded back to him over the last couple days or yesterday mostly about the what I looked at in the specifications and found any fault with. And I thought, as we left one of our earlier discussions, that we were unsure about aluminum. And the other discussion was I was pretty sure that in the process of the road and the culverts that we upgraded the bottom culvert by quite a bit of size, and then John was also saying that the 18 should be upgraded to 24.
Yes.
And that was listed in two different places with two different sets of numbers in Matt's latest proposal. Mm-hmm. He still had 18 inches under the road project, even with the notation two or three pages before that of the fact that they were to be upgraded to 24 and the culvert down at the bottom upgraded to
10.
Big. So the last that I saw was that he had made changes to the culvert size. And then there was a couple of conversations between Marla and Matt and about the meeting day for the next thing, but mostly some of the specifications and numbers of
Brook Road is not Town Highway 10.
Yeah, that kind
but
of stuff.
On the RFP, I peeked at last night. I didn't read through the whole thing because it was like 10 p.m. and I wasn't going to read through the whole RFP again. But I think that the Brook Road was still Town Highway 10.
Which is my road.
Yes. Yeah,
which is
not the Brook Road.
Brook Road is, should be Town
Marla
Highway 2, I think.
Him. I thought Marla had answered him
I think
and
she
told
did.
Him what Town Highway it actually was, because I didn't know that one.
Okay. I did not see...
But I don't think he changed it, so...
It, an update was put on the website thing for what I said about culverts and something to do with the designation of roads or whatever. I have not looked at it. The time frame under all of his paperwork is for him to release it tomorrow.
Right.
Which requires that we all are on the same page
right.
as of today.
So with the aluminum culverts, he called me up and it said in the H&H test at the bottom, that's when I brought it up to this guy, any similar structure that fits the site conditions could be considered.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to put that in there with those so we would have a comparison of cost whether we do it or not, it doesn't matter. He just wanted to show us the comparison of cost versus that structure that the town of Linden using and Stockbridge and all them guys are all using them. And then we could have our cost comparison to the box culverts that we originally talked about. So, and I said, well, as a standpoint to us three here deciding for the town, it probably would be nice to have a cost evaluation of that. We ain't got to use it. It's just a cost evaluation of that structure.
Yeah. Well, as it's put into those bids on the specifications, any one of these contractors could bid just aluminum.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to bid concrete as well. The aluminum least expensive, da-da-da, round and round and round. So the only thing from our standpoint is we can't control what somebody wants to bid.
Right.
So if everybody wants to bid because they're going to figure that it's the least expensive type thing to go with the aluminum, so be it. I mean, that's we're not telling somebody necessarily that you have to do this or you have to do that. It's an option in there. You can choose to bid whatever you want to. I guess my only concern is because there's not enough known about it. What do they do for hardware on aluminum structures if they're putting pieces together?
Bolts.
Made out of what?
Aluminum, I would assume.
Well, that's the part that makes me nervous.
It is.
Never had to deal with the fact that somebody make,
open, but it's very rough.
Culvert or bridge, whatever you want to call it, out of aluminum. You obviously can't have steel because the two things will rot each other out. And I don't know what the strength of an aluminum bolt is.
Probably stainless steel.
No, yeah, you can go all the way
through. Well, the thing that I look at is that this aluminum structure is engineered from a company to go fit the needs of whatever this is.
Underground, underwater.
So.
Now, was that one that you looked at on the Brook Road? A continuous piece?
Yeah, the whole.
Is it all welded together, bolted together?
Yeah, a lot of it's welded together and bolted together.
But I think you'll still probably have to.
We're talking bolts.
Like a Quonset hut.
And when things dry out, you
set down and then bolted.
Up top, they did some welding. They have a welder. They weld the tops and the sides that come off it
are the wing walls.
Wing walls are welded, and some are. It's quite a structure. I mean, but like I said, this is, it's engineered to fit the job. I can't, I'm not an engineer. I don't know.
Me either, why.
If they're putting them in as an engineered process, and I'm sure it's been tested. I don't know. But he just, he met with a contractor down there that did 15 of them, he told me. He's put 15 of these in so far. And he's had,
Matt had met with
a guy that's put 15 of them in.
Yeah.
And, his response to me was, well, I don't understand why you guys just don't put that in as a option when you got the town previous to you doing the same thing, and they're doing them all down there. And I said, well, if you want to put it in there as an option, I guess go ahead and do it. We don't have to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
We can just say, no, we don't want that bid. We don't want these. It's just a matter of what we decide on, whether we want to do it or not.
Yeah, if it's the least expensive and we only get bids on aluminum, that, I guess, would be my only concern.
And I don't think we're only going to get bids on aluminum myself.
I think you'll still have some people wanting to do the old school concrete.
I think so.
and I don't know if there is any span limitation, like, for instance, the one that's, I believe it's just below our border on Brook Road is that one that is in the picture that was sent out. That's considerably smaller in dimension than the one up at the top
I guess. I mean, that's what I'm concerned about, because it's, you know, the brook starts at the top and it goes all the way down through the road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're putting that in that same brook,
mm-hmm.
which is the same runoff, the same brook. You know, I would say that when they go back to their H&H test, they're going to design that to fit that H&H test, and that's what you got.
What was there before? Just culverts?
I don't know, yeah. Honestly.
Just culverts on that lower section, so they weren't bridges like what?
No.
But they didn't have the wing walls or nothing on the culverts. They just took them right out. You know, that's why I suggested, as long as that met the 56 square feet inside, then that's what, if that meets 56 square feet, then that's what it is. Whether it's a box culvert, that there, whatever.
Well, essentially we're in a position that... he wants to release that tomorrow.
Right.
So all of us have to be on the same page for exactly what it says. The culvert upgrade, I mean, that's not a big deal. He said he made those changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had a chance to look back. I don't get along well with that.
I don't either.
Me either.
I
had him send it here, and did he send it here? Did I told him? I thought I told him to send it here so we could copy it out.
If he's changed that, and the town highway number designation stuff isn't corrected, then...
I haven't looked at it. I don't know how to... I've tried to get into this thing, and I just...
I stumbled through it enough to see that's where I saw in one page.
I just was like, I can't get into something. I can't. How am I going to read that? And I was hoping he's going to send it here for, so we could actually go through this morning and look at it.
He should be sending to everybody in that chain. In other words, all three of us.
Yeah.
Wanda, treasurer.
Right.
I
know somebody talked about salt on these things here, but we don't use salt.
There's salt in every piece of dirt that goes out. You know that. But, otherwise, you'd have a.
But you know, we don't like prefer though. Like Town of Linden goes out with a full load of salt and salts their blacktops. But where these are going, aren't blacktop roads.
Ain't no blacktop.
So.
Other than.
Well, the only thing that scares me, to be honest with you, and I've dealt with this, you know, this whole FEMA thing. You know, if we go into debt of $3 million, $4 million. And we don't, this FEMA thing turns into a rat race. This town is in debt for $4 million to pay back. And, you know, nothing's a guarantee of what we're going to get for money yet.
Nope, not at all.
So, I mean, if you can have these structures put in for $2 million versus $4 million, I'd rather be in debt for $2 million than $4.
So long as it specs out to do what it's supposed to.
Oh,
so
it will spec out.
With any government funding, we have to get more than one price, you know, all this, right? And you, like, have to take the lowest bid as long as it's quality. You most times have to take the lowest bid. I would say that is probably the one thing. Like, if they quote those.
Well, I brought that up to him, and he said no.
And it's always the lowest price.
Or
you may have to accept them for reimbursement.
Or pay
the difference. Yes.
And I called him on that, and he didn't seem to think that would be the case, but I don't know. Because I did call him on that. I said, before you put that in those specs, I want to make sure that if we do get the lowest price on these, we don't, funding-wise, where are we at? And he didn't think that was the case, but I don't know.
But didn't think and absolutely knew are two very different things. And that's scary. We can't afford to pay for all of these ourselves.
Right. Well, that's what I'm stating, so I don't know. You know, call him up and ask him. Say, okay, back to your structural thing, because we got to have this signed off tomorrow. He wants to put it out there, so we really need to know if that is the lowest price on our bids. Do we have to take that bid, and is the town going to be responsible to pay the rest?
Well, we
and
may
I feel
have
like that's
to.
More
we
of
may
a
have
FEMA
to.
Question than a matter of
it's no different than.
But if
it
we don't
be
put
no
it
different
out, then
than
we won't.
It be no different than everybody putting in box culverts and not giving us a price. If we don't use that, we're gonna pay for a box culvert.
Right. But if we don't put that in there, period, box cover is going to be covered.
Right. Or they could say, no, you could have gone the other route. Who knows?
Well, that's what he saw. Well, maybe that's where what he said right here, when it says any similar structure that fits the site conditions could be considered. Well, that can be considered to fit the site. Right? So in this bid that these people are going to bid on, whatever he put in the RFP, it still says it right here. Any similar structure.
Because they're going to bid whatever the hydrological study says you need to put in there to accommodate that brook.
Right. So that is a similar structure.
Railroad ties or box culvert.
Right. Okay. So or similar structure.
I mean, the last thing I'm worried about is whoever engineered this, engineering it with steel bolts that are going to rot off.
Oh, I hear you.
What struck me, that ain't going to happen. Looking at it, is there was 8 pages, but there was more than that.
They ain't going to happen. They can't put their name on that.
Maybe 8 pages of this and then...
Ain't going to happen. They're going to put bolts in there. They ain't going to fucking...
They're going to put stainless steel bolts in there. And they're torquing them.
Exactly.
And I saw the guy on that post bitching because he had to torque everyone.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm sure that...
But you want it 24.
Without a doubt, it's probably taut and pinned.
Mm. And he had
24.
it's not like they don't know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Which were the jobs were lined up.
I mean, the fucking thing.
If I was so goddamn smart I could sit here and figure this out, I wouldn't be sitting in this fucking chair.
I wouldn't either.
I mean, I got to leave it to the people that's their job. That's their job.
I agree. I agree. I'm not going to listen to what this guy over here says about
salt and dry.
I mean, guys, this is an engineered product.
Right.
See? Town Highway 10.
I can fucking tell you if the bolt's going to stay on there in 10 years or 20. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Right.
Because I don't know.
So what do they put over the top of this thing?
So over the top.
That's what I
they
saw.
They had rods, you know, coming through with the whole thing.
They're going to concrete. They're going to put concrete.
I don't know. I don't know that point. I didn't see the finished product other than the dirt over the ones down here. But I don't know if a concrete truck came in prior to that and poured over the top and then put the dirt over that. I'd have no idea. But I know the base of it, John said he went down and they had a big pump truck there and they were pouring cement for that base to sit down in.
Yeah.
And then they'll attach everything to
two
that.
Pieces and bolts on the bottom.
Right.
I saw that picture. I didn't see nothing over the top.
I mean, this will be a discussion that when it comes out to the bidders in here,
right,
pre-bid, we can ask these questions.
Right. Exactly.
What comes with that.
So I say,
send it. Off.
Send it. That's what I said too. Got my blessing.
And here's how I look at it. It's going to be fucking darn well good in there right now. Which is nothing.
Yeah, and if we don't get going on it, we're going to have nothing.
Right.
Because we ain't going to get enough fucking people that ain't busy.
Go back up before that. Or is it there?
Down there on my road? Fuck, I think one of those would be fucking fine, dude. It's just a little fucking broke, man. Why spend $2 million when you can spend fucking...
Well, the only thing is, that Bennett Road Brook ain't all that big.
No. That's why I brought up the suggestion that when we get them hard rains, we get all that rain from going driving down through there.
Yeah.
We get it all right there, dude.
I know.
That brook turns into like 3 times the brook.
I know. All because of other problems.
Correct.
Because right now... You probably walk across that without getting your feet wet.
Exactly.
Just like we did when we went over there, across the brook.
That's all the runoff you get from everything else that goes over the son of a bitch. And we got nowhere to put it but to that. So.
To answer Aaron about Project 2, Brook Road is Town Highway 2.
Okay. How about any of the rest of it? Not a big deal.
Sorry, it is Project 4 about Brook Road.
And then I thought we were anti-aluminum, but apparently I was wrong here, so... So, if we want to...
This is after I make all the changes per the comments. Ken has never said, well, not yet, because he didn't make all the changes per the comments.
Okay, so he changed the culverts from 18 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
And at one spot, description was 24. When he got down to the map and pointing out which ones were where, he was still at 18, saying replace 18, replace the culverts 18 inch. So he has changed that.
Mm-hmm.
He has not changed the town highway designations correctly. So he still has Town Highway 10, which is Town Highway 2.
Right here, Brook Road. This location is also known as Town Highway 10.
Right, so you're going to have to email him to say that it's not Town Highway 10. That's Town Highway 2, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
And this is Town Highway 10 over here on my
correct
project, whatever he's in there.
Right, right. That's, I don't want to release it to him until he makes that
change
correction just because of...
Right.
Hell, somebody's going to be over there doing something and blah,
right,
blah, blah. So she makes that correction,
yeah,
and tells him, okay, here's the correction, and the select board
approved
is
it
in unanimous agreement to release it. Now all he's got to do is change that to the right damn road.
Right.
The right town highway designation.
Right.
And release it. Which
correct.
He can do that today without any big deal, and it would be released for tomorrow, which is the time frame he wants.
Right.
Which would be fine. I mean, I kind of thought we weren't going to do too much with the, you know, hesitant about the aluminum stuff being new.
I think he stated that we're going to get them anyway, because it says any similar structure will work on the H&H test.
Right. Well, maybe somebody hasn't. All I'm knowing is local contractors. Has anybody put in aluminum one prior to, for instance, Casella doing this one? I've never seen one until Casella did that one.
And they did one down here on this road here, too. If you go down the Red Village Road.
Yeah.
With a temporary bridge they put in off Sheldon Brook Road. Just after that, they put one of the same structures in down there, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Steve Baker made it sound like they were putting them in all over the place.
Well, that's what he said. That
they are.
Got them all over.
And I think back to where it's probably a cheaper cost for the contractor to get the job.
Well, we had that. There were three quotes that came out early a month or more ago, when someone first mentioned the aluminum, and a guy gave us three figures for aluminum culverts or whatever
right.
you want to.
I think he also stated that it's a lot quicker to get the
correct
the piece to do the job than wait on a box culvert.
And that's a matter of engineering specifications, that someone puts the
right
correct specifications for the aluminum.
Right.
I didn't see, how did they attach wing, there were wing walls in the second picture.
They're all attached to that one product. Basically, it's a culvert that has attached wing walls to that piece that are welded and bolted in there. So when they're all said and done, that whole piece is connected as one. Completely.
So you got to have, theoretically, more support behind those wing walls than you would if they were concrete or not?
Well, so basically your wing walls are going out and they're just building them that bank and with stone or dirt or whatever they're doing against them wing walls, you know, against that. So obviously they're strong enough to support the dirt, and then you need to have the support so when the water hits it, obviously it doesn't push it the other way. So
and then it would be a matter of whether this one down here that has to have an open bottom, whether
right.
the aluminum can
right.
qualify
my only
for this, that.
You know, my only thing I here, like down here, we got a big hole. We got a big hole over there. You know, I don't know if these wing walls, I'm assuming, I mean, that would be a question we're going to have to ask our bidders. You know, is there a certain height that these wing walls come with their HH? You know, I'm sure they're not all the same. They got to build this unit to meet the specs of the water quality going through that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, well, you know, we're just lucky enough to be on the
sort of front end of a technology change that we have more questions than answers per se.
20 years down the road?
Well, we'll get to talk to everybody that puts a bid in.
Right. So how many of these have you done? Or how many of these have you done? Or, you know, I mean, they're all going to have their opinion. You know, whether they want to voice it at a meeting.
Where they're on record.
I don't know. But
Looks pretty simple.
Huh?
Looks pretty simple.
Let me see what you got.
Got the one from...
No, this is just a picture of a...
Yeah, this is kind of a picture of an aluminum one right here. Yeah, see, these are all tied together.
Yeah, see, you know... Okay, so it's not square.
No.
It's...
Correct.
So they've got to have that arc for their structural integrity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That looks like awful placid water to me, but either way. Yeah, I mean, specifications are specifications,
right.
And they have to... You can't bid something that doesn't meet the specifications.
Right.
Nope.
So...
Nope, you can't.
And you know, last I knew, other than you, none of us are engineers enough to know.
That's
I'm not. So do you got everything good with him on that?
If I tell him just to fix that Town Highway 10 to Town Highway 2, that's
right.
Everything, and
yep.
He's good to go? Okay.
I do believe.
Yep. Well, at least get it out there. And
right.
Push comes to shove, we'll find out. In the
right.
Was that just a scrap that was around the job?
Yeah, I picked it. John picked it up and brought it and threw it in the back of my truck, which I had already known anyway. But so you guys could kind of see what was what there with those things. But yeah, I you know, like I said, I don't know no more about it than you or me.
Okay, next select board meeting, Monday, April 7th, 6 p.m. I'll make a motion, we adjourn.
Seconded.
All in favor.
All right,
so we'll move.
So when is you got the smart sheet schedule there?
Yeah.